I'm Bob Ryan of the Boston Globe and ESPN.
I'm Mitch Albom of the Detroit Free Press.
I'm Mike Klubiga, MLB.com, MSNBC, and other venues. Welcome to the Monday edition of the Sports Reporters Podcast. We come to you each Monday and Friday and continue the longstanding tradition of the Sports Reporters and Bob and Mitch and I working together. So thank you again for joining us. I'm going to turn this right over to Mr. Ryan, who got home at 2 a.m.
on the dot, Mike.
2 a.m. from Fenway Park last night after the Red Sox concluding another improbable game in this weekend, coming from three runs down in the ninth to tie, winning it in the bottom of the 10th. And, Bob, I will say this. I just wrote this. This game lasted so long, it seemed to end up in October of 2004 for the New York Yankees.
Well, let's start with the fun stat here, which is that games two and three of this four game series took a total of 4 hours and 48 minutes to play.
Yeah,
and that last night's took 4 hours and 39 minutes, and it entered its fifth hour in the ninth inning. So there's always that, which means the Red Sox and Yankees are back to normal after 2 days of aberrational speedy play. I have long maintained, and this goes back 30 years, that were I a sports editor with guts, I would cover baseball by the series, not by the day. That you would have to explain to people, or have to account to people how the game went, or who scored the runs, and how the game went daily. But when the series was over, your writer, your man, or your woman would compose a graceful essay tying together all the ins and outs and the scope and meaning of the series. If ever a series deserved that kind of regular season treatment in our experience, it was this series, which began last Thursday night with the 15 when the Yankees ahead 3-0 after three batters had been gone to the plate, and then led 4-0 in the second inning, and eventually lost the game 15-7 with a pitcher named Jonathan Holder, who had been pitching lights out all year, particularly on the road, giving nobody out in the fourth inning with seven consecutive guys reaching base and five of them scoring. Ending with Jonathan Holder after a blown save by Chapman, losing the game in the 10th inning. All kinds of stuff. Two pitching gems by the Red Sox. And the simple fact that if it's gone the other way, the Yankees would be 1.5 out, but it went the way it went, and they are now 9.5 out, 8 in the loss, 11 in the win. Okay, I'm done. Yeah. No, I'm done, but I'll take it back.
So if you're the editor and you say to your writer, sum it up in a sentence, buddy boy, is it over?
You have to say realistically, it's hard to believe that the Yankees are going to bounce back. What if the Red Sox are going to blow it? Or the latter than the former. The Red Sox don't appear to be a team that's going to blow it this year. I think that. But it would be it would encompass in there would be the fact that the Red Sox beat them every which way. And that the Yankee defensive problem, which has been around and not noted enough nationally, was on acute display this week. And of course, ultimately, that in the game that they had wrapped up, playing the game they liked the way they liked to play it, they couldn't even wrap it up with everything going their way.
You know, Bob, I did some checking today because objects in the rearview mirror can sometimes be closer than they appear. That is the Oakland Athletics for the New York Yankees. When the Yankees, Mitch and Bob, when the Yankees were 50-22, and I thought they were the team that was eventually going to be on a pace to win 113 the way the Red Sox are, they were 13 games ahead of the Oakland Athletics. They are now 2.5 games ahead of the Oakland Athletics. When they were 50-22, the A's were 38-36. The Yankees have now played 18-20 baseball for the last 38 games, which is a quarter of a baseball season. That's not a small sampling. That's a serious sampling. Obviously, they miss Aaron Judge. That's not even in dispute. But they are having the same starting pitching issues they always seem to have. And here's the let me ask, Bob, I'll ask you this, okay? If you're a Yankee fan, and we know that the glass half full Yankee fan says, hey, wait a minute, we were 50-22. When we get everybody back, we're going to be fine. We got a soft schedule the rest of August. We hear all the time about how sustainable the organization is, and it is true. They have never had a losing season over the last quarter century. They almost always make the playoffs. However, they have not won the American League East since 2012. They have won one World Series in the last 18 years, and that was 9 years ago. And Bob, is it fair to watch what has happened over this nearly 2 months of baseball and have a right to say maybe the run they got on in October last year was a bit of a fluke? Because if you look back, you know that the biggest thing that happened to them in the division series was that Corey Kluber was hurt.
I think that's a fair analysis of that situation. I mean, that you have to really take a long, hard look at the record. You know, now I'm going to go contradict myself in a big way here. Your man, Mr. Bill Parcells, famously says you are what your record says you are.
But you dispute that, Ryan.
And I have always disputed that in general terms. And in football, I think it's ludicrous. Everything depends on who you're playing, when you're playing, who's hurt, who's not, what the weather was, and all that. So don't give me all that crapola, Bill. I'm sorry. But what you just annotated as a record for a quarter of a season, and knowing how it was arrived, and knowing what, as you've already described, the pitching situation, which is ongoing, and the defensive situation, which is not discussed enough, I would say that their record right now, may that subpar record, sub 500, may very well be who they are.
Well, I'm glad you mentioned their defense, because for me, I mean, this really began when we were talking about it on Friday with bad defense and Jonathan Holder on the mound, and the whole thing ended with bad defense and Jonathan Holder
yes.
on the mound.
Symmetry, Mitch, was exquisite in this series.
And just some of the boneheadedness of some of the plays that, you know, when you have two really great teams, one boneheaded play is going to make a game. And some of the throws and some of the defensive shifts, and you know, some of it's luck. I mean, you know, where JD Martinez hit that shot that basically you know, brought the Red Sox back, you know, 2 feet to the left or right, and the game's over, and
one
we're
foot
not talking
lower.
About this the same way. Okay, but it didn't. And you know, all of it all kind of began in Baltimore. So I just think the sloppy play would concern me as much as anything else. You know, when Judge, and I didn't realize this, and I saw it written in one of the ESPN pieces, when Judge and Sanchez are both playing, the run differential between when they're not is like a run and a half, and that's a lot in baseball. And, you know, I guess a Yankees fan could say, well, all we need is them back, and we're just going to go back to our formula of clubbing our way to a win and then having our closer, Chapman, take care of things at the very, very end, although certainly he didn't take care of things yesterday. What was that, 39 pitch,
ninth
game,
inning,
isn't
Mitch.
It? 39
pitch, ninth
His
inning.
Earned run average, Bob, did you see this? And Mitch, did you see this? His earned run average is really high. It's like crazy high against the Red Sox mm-hmm. since he joined the New York Yankees. And here's the thing about Sanchez. And listen, he is still a dangerous bat. But we're also talking about a guy who's hitting 188 this season. Okay, who has been a profound disappointment at the plate and in the field. Judge is the big guy they're missing. Okay, but you know, there's always a point when you start talking about your injuries where everybody else says, well, boo frickety who, okay? I heard somebody saying the other night, the Yankees, wow, we've had to use 8 starting pitchers this year. Okay, the Oakland A's have used 12 starting pitchers this year. One of them, Bobby, we were talking about this the other day. One of them is Edwin Jackson, who I assume was 75 years old because he had pitched for about 75 teams. And but they're finding a way to figure it out. I think this next few weeks for the Yankees is a huge crucible. They still have 6 games left with the Red Sox this season. One series at Yankee Stadium, one series at Fenway Park. The Reds, you know, we've gone over this, Mitch. The Red Sox in September have to play the Indians, the Astros, I think the Braves, in addition to the two series with the Yankees. So I'm not one of these people who say, oh, no, the AL East is automatically over. Bob, you know that 40 years ago when the Yankees came all the way back, it took one significant injury to Rick Burleson to completely alter the dynamic of that Red Sox team. So stuff can happen, okay? But this, to me, was as profoundly important an August series as I can remember, because you're right. If it had gone the other way, what would we be saying this morning about the American League East? But for the Red Sox to finish it off with all the bad things that happened to the Yankees, what, three walks, Martinez, and then, Mitch, the best part of the game was they put in Jackie Bradley, who started it with a brilliant base-running play on Thursday night as a pinch runner right. in the bottom of the ninth. And so when Andujar throws the ball in the dirt, and by the way, that ball should have been caught. I know it would have been a very good play at first base.
Oh, yeah, no, it was in his glove, right?
Yeah.
No,
and Mitch, Bradley is coming around from second. He never stops, and just like that, it's 4-4. And at that point, you knew there was no way the Yankees could win the game in extra innings.
And may we point out, when you talk about, well, all it takes is one significant guy to be out and your fortunes can change, Chris Sale wasn't pitching. So when he comes back, and if, as Bob observed last week, this isn't really a shoulder inflammation kind of thing that needs to be worried about. It's as much rest as anything else. If he comes back like Chris Sale is coming back, you still haven't seen the best of the Red Sox. So, I don't like to say anything's over in August. We're all old enough to remember 40 years ago when it was a 14.5 game deficit that was made up and the Yankees won on a single day against Boston in a fairly famous game and then went on to do the same thing against the Dodgers coming back and winning a World Series. But it was 40 years ago. So while I'm not saying it's over, I agree with Bob's assessment that this is not a Red Sox team with Sale not even pitching right now that just looks like it's going to blow a lead
either, Mitch. But all I'll say is you don't even want to talk about stuff like this. Say something happened to Mookie Betts that had him out for a month. That just completely – he's been the most valuable player in baseball if Trout isn't the way he always is. And here's the interesting thing about last night. So much happened, particularly at the end, that we lost sight of the fact that David Price, Mr. Ryan – may have pitched his most significant game of the season, and you thought the bigger inning was later on. I thought him getting out of bases loaded in the first inning after giving up six home runs the last time he faced this team was a huge moment for this guy. I thought it was a huge breakthrough the way he pitched last night.
No, I think you're very right. And when I said to you earlier that I thought the sixth inning was that he needed that shutdown inning as he took that amount, I said this is his most important inning of the season. I had not taken into consideration the first, and I would have said since the first inning.
Yeah.
I will amend that. You were correct. That first inning was vital, and I thought that was sixth inning was highly significant. And I was really surprised when he came back for the seventh because I really thought that Alex Cora was going to treat him almost as if he was a young lad that needed that positive reinforcement, that he wanted him to feel good about himself, about the whole picture. And having struck out Voit to end the sixth and get out of it, that one, I thought that was enough of good work for the night, and let's bring on someone else.
Mitch, since you practically rooting for the Red Sox is practically rooting for the Tigers.
It is. I want to point out that Rick Porcello, Detroit's own. A one-hitter. David Price, once Detroit's own. Fine performance. J.D. Martinez, once Detroit's own. So as they sang in Moana,
Ian Kinsler,
except you're welcome.
And Ian Kinsler now. But Matt, the question I'm asking you is, even with no real skin in this game, you have to be able to appreciate what a great show the Red Sox have been this season, continue to be this season. And I think we talked about this the other day. I think the only thing that might happen is Betts and Martinez might take MVP votes away from each other, and so they might hand it to Mike Trout this year.
Sometimes what you see in front of you is what you see in front of you. You know, we in sports, we like to circle around everything, and when something looks great, we try to find a flaw, and when something looks flawed, we try to find its greatness. Witness Tiger Woods. So sometimes it is exactly what you see in front of you. The Red Sox are built very well. They spent the money to be built very well. There's a reason for this. They're not getting lucky here. They went out and got really good players. And right now, those good players, with the exception of Sale being injured, are all churning. The Yankees did the same thing. And at the moment, considering several of them are injured and other ones of them, like Chapman yesterday, are not performing at that the level they're not. I mean, but they're a great, sitting out here where there is no real baseball going on, despite the fact that we have a team. You get to watch a Yankees Red Sox series. It's terrific. And I would have looked forward to seeing them play in some kind of series in the postseason. And maybe we'll still get that. But I do think you raised a good point, Mike, that the Yankees, they can look for the Red Sox because it's always smart to look up and try to play that way. But somebody on that in that squad has to look over their shoulder at Oakland and Seattle. Oakland's 2.5 back and Seattle's 2.5 behind them. I don't know what kind of schedule Seattle has coming up in the remaining weeks of the season. I don't know if it's anywhere near as easy as the Yankees. But right now, easy and Yankees really aren't two words that should be going together anyhow. I mean, they did lose to Baltimore. They do have a pretty tough record against Baltimore. Aren't they 500 against them so far this season? And Baltimore's awful. So you got to be concerned about who's coming up from behind there. It's not a lock that they're in the postseason. Whereas I think anybody would be crazy to say that that's true for the Red Sox. So, as they say in golf, they've got work to do.
And before we get off baseball, and we're going to talk about Ohio State again today in Urban Meyer's situation, which involved an assistant coach named Zach Smith, who is no longer with the program. But the Red Sox have the best record in baseball. The second best record belongs to the defending champions of the whole wide world, the Houston Astros, who just signed Roberto Osuna, who has his own and also profound issues about domestic violence, served a suspension as we said the other day to a fairly well, all of these cases are different, but it shows you what happens in sports when you are still useful, when you can produce, when you can give a chance a team to be better. So Osuna met with the Astros. He is now an Astro. We saw their statement. He talked to the players. This to me is an interesting sidebar to what is happening in Columbus, Ohio right now.
Well, you're absolutely right. Here's a phrase that when we were growing up, we just wouldn't have thought possible. Osuna successfully completed his MLB domestic violence program requirements.
Right.
I mean, the fact that there is this now, and I don't know. I suppose all issues can be dealt with rehabilitation of some kind. I don't know what it is. I don't know what the program is. I imagine it involves some teaching and some evaluating and some learning, and that's all very good. Because let's face it, that there are situations where men come into sports from backgrounds where they have not been taught what's right or wrong when it comes to how you treat women. And it's good that the major sports have those kinds of programs. But you're right, Mike. The same, and we're seeing this all across the national landscape. The same sin is not treated the same way, depending on who you are, where you are, and what value you have for your particular organization. And it's going on now in a very, very large spotlight with Les Moonves at CBS. And we're going to see what happens there, you know. So you're right. He's they need him. He's helpful. He did his time, so to speak, in this. And we'll see what happens.
Mitch, here's the Astro, just part of the Astro statement, because it's nuanced, but I think worth reading. Our decision to acquire Roberto was based on the entirety of information that we gathered during our extensive evaluation. That included as much information as we could gather about the specific incident and the charges that were filed, but it also included as much information as we could gather about his actions before and after the incident, as well as his personal reputation among former teammates and coaches. The information regarding this specific incident weighed heavily on our decision. But when evaluating the entirety of the information, I'm saying information a lot, aren't I, Mitch?
Yeah.
We felt that Roberto deserved a second chance. And by the way, I'm not disputing that. I always thought that Ray Rice actually deserved a second chance, despite what we saw with our own eyes. But I think the subtext there was, and we really think he can give us a chance to repeat.
Yeah.
Oh, well, this speaks and there's clearly, that too. And you were talking about the usefulness of these, you know, individual being the determinant factor. They're desperate for a closer. They're desperate, and yep. and you know, Giles has been exiled, and they don't have one, and it's their one thing standing between them, they feel, and defense of a championship, and so this is their. And here, what I heard this morning, and I'm just now, this is like, it would be down to third hand, fourth hand. I heard this morning that it has been reported by a reputable reporter that these guys, the Astros, were quote unquote surprised by the blowback, unquote, that they have received by the signing of Roberto Osuna, which,
really?
If true, is a remarkable level of obtuseness in the
in a Me Too world. They're surprised at the blowback.
This is what I was told. What I heard on the airwaves this morning.
All right. Well, anyway, so but it shows you the difference, Mitch. It shows you the difference to put a bow on this particular conversation between an expendable assistant coach and a guy who you think can help you win.
Yeah, and surprised by the blowback is an interesting segue into the Ohio State situation,
yep.
because
yep.
the most recent news in that is that Ohio State is now saying that they plan to have this investigation done in 14 days, which is pretty amazing.
Mitch, it's
to
like
me.
An episode of Law and Order. It's like yeah. it's like a, just a four or five Law and Orders.
We know when it's going to wrap up. We're going to have this done in 14 days, which, by the way, would be convenient enough that they could reinstate Urban Meyer and have the program pick up without missing too much of a beat in anticipation of the 2018 season. Now, on Friday, we talked about this, and you know, I took one position. I think you guys were a little stronger on the other. I said, I see a way that he gets out of this. You know, it may not be big. It may be like a keyhole. But I can see a way that he gets out of it. And I have to say today on Monday morning, given the statements that have been made between when we last spoke on Friday and now, where he basically came out and said, I failed. Notice he used the verb failed, not lied. I failed to uphold the accuracy of the statements that I should have been making with regard to the situation, and said that he wasn't prepared in the Big Ten meetings, wasn't prepared to discuss the thing, and yet still didn't say that why he couldn't just say, I'm not prepared to discuss that right here, which is exactly what he said in his statement, instead of saying, there was nothing, I never heard anything, nobody ever came to me with anything, which is a blatant lie. But he addressed it. And this is their big, 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 big thing that of course, he's on the hook for. Not necessarily that he did something wrong when it was happening during the time, because he's going to claim, I believe, that he notified everybody who he needed to notify, which is something we heard in the Penn State case and something we hear in some other ones. Hey, my job isn't to fix it. My job isn't to necessarily even have a stance on it. My job is to tell my superiors, which is amazing coming from football coaches who otherwise control every single thing in their program. Every single decision gets made, but all of a sudden, this kind of stuff's out of my hands, you know? And I say again, on this Monday, I see a way that he is going to be coaching Ohio State this year, despite
Mitch,
the fact that there's so many people say he's going to be gone. I don't believe it.
He made his statement after we finished our podcast on Friday, okay? And my first reaction was, this is what he thinks is the road to perdition for him, okay? This is what he thinks he has to do to survive. And if he does survive, it's a variation of what we were just saying about Roberto Osuna. It's because he's Urban Meyer, okay? And I saw all the names of the committee that is investigating him. And I think that there is now, Mitch, I completely agree with you. I think there's a path that they're going to say what he basically did was lie. And they're going to give him a pass on the lie. But look at the BS of what this guy said. Okay. These guys are the most powerful people at their universities. They're the most powerful people in their states most of the time. And you're right. To call them micromanagers is like insulting to other micromanagers. Okay. They think they're God at these places. Unfortunately, at Big Ten Media Day on July 24th, I failed on many of these fronts, as Mitch just said. My intention was not to say anything inaccurate or misleading. Really, Urban? Yeah, it was. However, I was not adequately prepared. Football coach here. I was not adequately prepared to discuss these sensitive personnel issues with the media, and I apologize for the way I handle those questions. Bobby, does this not sound like every athletic apology we've ever heard?
Oh.
If I've offended anybody, I want to apologize. And you always want to say to the TV set, no, you dumb bastard, you have offended anybody. That's why you're apologizing.
No, there's a manual that has been distributed to these people that we, you know, don't have privilege access to. All these people have a manual distributed which tells them how to phrase the predictable apology when the inevitable comes. Oh yeah, and look, there's the story in this one that let's just get right down to the idea. This is not an idea of a guy. The man in question, Zach Smith, is not just another assistant coach in the long a line of faceless assistant coaches across the country. He was a guy with whom this coach, Urban Meyer, was intimately associated over a long period of time, and whose wives are close friends, and whose wives confide in each other. And then we have Urban Meyer, who has told the world how important his wife Shelley is to his entire operation, which goes beyond being a husband and a father and being an advisor in every which way possible. Yep. And he relies on her good judgment. That's what we have here, folks. And so we just step back, take a deep breath, and say, okay, that's all.
Well, but he's addressed that in the way that these guys address it. He used the word, I apologize. He used the words, I didn't mean to. And while people like us can sit here and say, that's absolute poppycock, and we know that you actually intended to divert and intended to lie and just didn't think anybody would be able to prove it because you probably didn't know that there were text messages out there that your wife had sent. Otherwise, you probably wouldn't have said that. The fact is, he goes on record and says this thing. And the fact is that they'll go back and look at the actual events. And the fact is that while there were 9 different incidents, there was never a charge. Never a charge. There was an arrest back in 2009, which was then dropped by his wife. And then there were incidents where things were called into the police. But when you hear, you know, in Zach Smith's interview with ESPN, came out and, you know, he kept talking about this would be ridiculous for him to lose his job over it, and it isn't what it seems, and it's between the two of us and all the rest of it. You're going to see more and more of this. And what you're referring to, Bob, when you said the manual, it's not the manual, it's lawyers. It's lawyers who are advising them. These are the words you need to say to wiggle out of what you're doing. Here is, we've buried the lead. We've buried the lead on this story. What matters on this story is who's going to make the decision. And they have announced what the committee is. The committee is made up of at least 3 members of the Board of Trustees of Ohio State.
And some serious lawyers, Mitch. And some serious lawyers.
And some serious lawyers. But it will ultimately be decided by Ohio State President Michael Drake. He's been there a few years. I don't know what his stand is on the football program, although anybody who's the president of Ohio State is going to be partial to the football program. He's most famous for dismissing the band leader over a culture of highly sexualized whatever. That was his most controversial firing up till now. And he is going to make the decision, not the NCAA, not the United States government, the president of Ohio State. So it's quite possible that if Urban Meyer says the right things, even though everybody rolls their eyes at them, and they look into this and they say, well, yes, the right people were notified. And after all, he wasn't charged with anything. And after all, he is gone and he was fired and he's not here anymore. I see it totally possible that they come out in less than 14 days and say, all right, he's clear. And everyone will make some noise and blah, blah, blah. And then the season will start.
Mitch, I agree with what you just said. Okay. But let me say this. And this thing about no charges being filed, the recent history of men and women in this country is littered with cases like this where charges are never filed or almost meaningless charges are filed against Ray Rice until elevator video comes out. Okay. I think Zach Smith's full of crap. Okay. I believe his ex-wife. I don't believe that women, I understand that some women could lie about this. I don't believe that women put themselves through this for any other reason than it happened and they lived in fear. Okay. And if you believe his account of one part where Meyer said, if you laid a hand on her, you're gone. Okay. For 3 years, he was aware of this. And so ultimately, this committee is going to decide one thing. Are we going to bang Urban Meyer for lying? That's what they're going to have to decide. Because in this case, even in a Me Too world, he's not the guy being accused of domestic violence, okay? And he's not even really being accused of suborning of domestic violence. But if they decide that there was a cover-up here, I still believe he could be in danger of losing his job.
Would be really cool if they had decided to let this be adjudicated by a 6-man panel who each received their mail in the state of Michigan. Then we could really believe the outcome of this.
Yeah, not going to happen.
No, I didn't think that was a logical.
One of the people on this committee, by the way, is Mary Jo White, who's a former U.S. attorney and former chair of the U.S. Securities and Exchange Commission. This is a serious lawyer.
Oh, no, they're very high-minded, you know, very, very impressive dossiers.
Well, but don't you think, Mike, what you just said, I think summed it up in the correct perspective. He himself is not being investigated for domestic violence. He is being accused of lying about knowing of a certain amount of it. Now, he has already addressed that in his way, and whether that is a satisfactory addressing or not is really what this committee is there to determine. Can't you see a thing where they come back and they say he needs to be suspended for a month or two, or he needs to have his pay taken up? Because, you know, he did come out and admit after he'd said it that he said the wrong thing, and that he did, and that he apologized for, even though he didn't use the word lying, not answering correctly, but he still did it. So we need to whack him a little bit, but we don't need to fire him. Can't you see that
no,
being
Mitch, Mitch, what you said a couple of minutes ago is extremely important to the conversation you and Bob and I are having today, okay? That was not an apology from Urban Meyer the other day, okay? That really wasn't an apology. That was an ass-saving, nuanced legal position. I don't think there's any question about that. He was establishing a legal position in front of a committee that has a bunch of lawyers on it.
Right. And did he do it? You know, if he pulled it off successfully, then they say, well, you know, there's no path to really fire him. Because remember, they have to also, they owe him $38 million if they fire him. I believe that's the figure. If they fire him and he's got some in his contract, if it's not for just cause or whatever, that's $38 million. Now, that's, in the big scheme of football programs, that's not break your bank money. But it's still serious money for a university to be paying out to somebody if he can make that claim. So his lawyers and the people who are watching out for Urban Meyer's future have him come out and make that statement ahead of the game to put him in a position to say, okay, I acknowledged my lack of candor, you know, using 47 words to avoid the word lying. But he gets out there legally, and don't think that that doesn't play into this too. If they fire him just because they want to look a certain way in the eyes of today's world, it could cost them $38 million. Mm. And that is going to factor into this. So they have to, all these legal minds on this committee, not only determine should Urban Meyer be paying for Zach Smith's sin and his knowledge or lack of knowledge or acknowledgement thereof, but do we have a legal case in which we can prove that he acted willfully enough that we don't have to pay him? And nobody seems to be talking about that, but that's going to come into play.
Mitch, what? But $38 million is obviously a lot of money, okay? But what did Michigan, and again, when we make these references, I'm not comparing the crimes, okay? But what did Michigan, I'm talking about the money that universities have. What did Michigan State have to pay on Nasser? What's the price tag going to be on that?
It's over $500 million.
Yeah. So when these schools need to find money under the bed, they kind of find it.
Yeah.
I think he's going to survive, Mitch. I didn't think so until I saw his statement, and I'm thinking I don't even think he did that willingly, okay? I think he looked at the landscape, he talked to his lawyers, he may even have talked to the school about this, okay? And I think he thinks he gave them enough. And again, to go back to what we've been talking about, there's two things that might save him, okay? One is, wasn't him. It was Zach Smith. That's one thing. The other thing is, and it may be true, they may suspend him for lying, but they might not see the lie he told at Media Day, and it was a lie, as a fireable offense.
Right. I think that that's what this is going to come down to, and maybe I'm making too much of this, but I felt something when I saw that headline that said, Ohio State announces this will be done in 14 days. If you're really looking at a thing that might unearth your football coach, you don't come out and say how quickly it's going to be over.
No, right? Mitch.
You say, we are going to dig into every single thing here, and however long it takes, it's going to take. That seemed to me to be like a bone thrown to the maniac football fans about, are you going to ruin our season over this thing?
Mitch, Christopher Lupica said this to me after Meyer made his statement the other day. And I think at the end of the day, this won't be about truth and beauty, okay? That they'll think that they don't have enough on him. And he said, Dad, you know why Urban Meyer's going to survive? Because he's Urban Meyer. And Ohio State doesn't want to fire Urban Meyer any more than Alabama would want to fire Nick Saban in similar circumstances. Bobby, don't you agree with that?
No, I do totally agree with that. I think it's going to take an awful lot to dislodge him. Yes, I do. I think that's a – we just have to remember the cultures that we're talking about here. And I know we got all these high-priced lawyers or whatever these people are and all their credentials and all that. But the fact is that we're talking about cultures that are unimaginable to those of us who live in these urban areas of the East where the college sport doesn't predominate. But the importance of Ohio State football and Columbus, Ohio, and the state of Ohio and other similar universities and other areas of the country is it cannot be over-exaggerated with how important fabric of the culture they are.
And I live in one of those regions. And I'm telling you, it's life's blood. And I'm also telling you that if for some reason they let Urban Meyer go over this, there'd be a whole lineup of schools who would be willing to take him. And they'd have their explanation about, well, you know, in our view, Urban Meyer paid a price, and he, after all, didn't do anything, and he, after all, and he certainly knows when he builds his staff here, he's not going to, and boom, he'd be employed within a month, and Ohio State doesn't want that either, and watch him take over some program and win. The guy wins wherever he goes, and as you said at the start of this, Mike, that's your currency. That's your value.
But, Mitch,
that's
let me ask you this. I agree with what you just said. Then why can't Rick Pitino get a job?
Rick Pitino is a different case. First of all, he is not without his own sin, all right? I think him not claiming he didn't know what his assistants did, there's the whole thing about him with the woman in the restaurant and all. He's not a moral high ground guy, all right? He didn't just prevaricate on one particular incident. He's got a laundry list of things going on. And
Bob,
his own
prevaricate means
behavior.
He lied about it, Bob. I'm
writing that one down.
Okay. Yeah, okay. Sometimes you just got to use a different word. But he just strikes people as icky at this point. And I don't know that he'll never get another job, but he's been through a ringer with NCAA violations. This is not that, Mike. And I said this last week. I said, does the NCAA get involved in this? That was a question. So far, I've heard nothing out
crickets.
Of them. And
yeah,
so
crickets,
I don't think they're going to stick their nose in this thing. Whereas, you know, clearly, someone with a history of NCAA trouble coming to a school which has to still live under those rules is different than a guy whose biggest sin may be that he lied in a press conference. And I do think that Urban Meyer would find employment rather quickly if Ohio State should somehow let him
Mitch,
go.
It's there's one other thing to say here, and you live in a Big Ten world and where football is absolutely as important in Michigan as it is in Ohio. And this may be and Bob's right, this may be another thing that saves this guy. To paraphrase the old line about the Boston Red Sox, in Columbus, Ohio, football is not a matter of life and death. It's way more serious than that.
Right. Yeah. All right, one more topic I'd like to bring up before we scoot on to our parting shots. Another hot-button issue for a long time now in sports is the anthem protests. We're heading into the NFL season. We're wondering what what the policies are or aren't going to be. Jerry Jones has made it very clear that if you're going to play for the Dallas Cowboys, you're going to stand for that anthem. And I don't believe he means standing for it in the locker room or hiding in the locker room. Right. I think he means right out there on the sidelines standing. And while that in and of itself garnered a lot of reaction, his quarterback, Dak Prescott, garnered even more when he came out and said, and I'm quoting here now, and I'll read it to you, "I never protest during the anthem, and I don't think that's the time or the venue to do so. The game of football has always brought me such at peace, and I think it does the same for a lot of people. A lot of people playing the game, a lot of people watching the game, a lot of people that have any impact of the game. So when you bring such a controversy to the stadium, to the field, to the game, it takes away. It takes away from that. It takes away from the joy and the love that football brings to a lot of people. So for me, I'm all about making a change, making a difference, and I think this whole kneeling and all that was just about was all about raising awareness. The fact that we're still talking about social injustice years later, and I think we've got to that point. I think we've proved and we know that there's social injustice. So I'm up for taking a next step, that whatever that step may be, for action and not just kneeling. I've always believed in standing up for what I believe in, and that's what I'm going to continue to do." For that statement, he has been vilified across the sports world, across the social media world, in many cases as a sellout. He was depicted on a mural in Dallas as a character from the film Get Out, with a gasping, terrified look of tears falling from his eyes. The artist said, "Yeah, you know, he looked like the character in there who was terrified." I don't know. What do we make of the reaction to Dak Prescott sort of the other way here? Here's a rare, high-profile African-American athlete who is saying, "I'm not kneeling. I don't think it's appropriate to protest during the anthem."
If he thinks they're there now, Mitch, he's nuts, okay? And I will defend his right to say every word of what he said. I will defend his right to feel the way he feels. I don't think he should be demonized for feeling the way he does. I just think he's wrong. I think it is a cockeyed narrative to say, "Oh, that's not the proper place." Dissent is you know, we've gone over this a lot. Dissent is as American as the flag that we're talking about here and the song that is played before games. Dissent is profoundly patriotic. It's profoundly American. And I would respectfully say to young Mr. Prescott, he doesn't get to decide where people, and especially young African-American men, get to protest about racial and social injustice in this country.
Well, I agree he doesn't get to decide it, but I think I'm saddened by this, because this is the flip side of the Colin Kaepernick decision and policy. And both of them should be acknowledged as legitimate. And you feel that this is a proper place to protest. You not go out and shoot somebody. You're protesting. A silent protest is all it is, on the one hand. And the other hand, the other man, Mr. Prescott, is saying, "I'm not comfortable with that. This isn't the way I would choose to do it. I don't think it's the proper way." And they both should be allowed to express themselves in as they see fit in a better world. You know, this idea that because he's an African American, he has to toe a line of a certain thought process, that when you know, after all, isn't the whole idea of racial blindness that everyone should be judged on individual merits and independent of color of skin? That's supposed to be the ideal. So I'm troubled. I frame it that way, and I defend his right to say what he does, even as I defend Kaepernick's right to do what he does, because ultimately it's to me, you know, it's harmless if Kaepernick kneels or anybody else, but that's the way I feel.
Mitch, let me ask you a question, because I think this is interesting to me. Dak Prescott is saying he doesn't think that the sideline of a football game during the playing of the national anthem is the appropriate place for this. Do you not find it ironic that the president of the United States thinks using his platform to attack the people doing this is somehow celebrated in great corners of this country?
No, I don't find it ironic, because just as kneeling for the anthem is celebrated in corners of this country, you can find corners of this country that will celebrate all positions. my feeling with regard to the president of the United States was, has been, and still is, I don't want myself or anyone I know to lower their own particular standards because the president has lowered them. I think, you know, and this is a political discussion that it may have little place in a sports podcast, but I think trying to measure your behavior by this particular president's behavior is only going to lead you to bad behavior. So I think that this is, we live in a time right now where we have to appeal to the better angels of our nature because the worse angels of our nature are all around us. I agree with Bob in that he's certainly, and as the quarterback of the Dallas Cowboys, he's not just another guy. He certainly has the right to make the statement, and I think they're burying the lead, those people who are concentrating on the first part of what he said about, I don't protest during the anthem, I don't think it's the time or venue to do so. Okay, that was one sentence in what he said. But further down, what he said was this was about talking about social injustice, and I think we're doing that, and I am up for, quote, taking a next step, whatever that step may be, for action and not just kneeling. I've been saying this all along. It's very easy to kneel, and it's very easy to take cover when a bunch of other people are kneeling too, and you have sort of the sentiment of the country behind you is, yes, you're being heroic, and all you got to do is take a knee. Do something about it. Wait, I'm not done. Do something about it specifically in your community or around the nation, and not just ask for money from the NFL for it, but actually do it. Now, there are some players who are doing it. There are an overwhelming number of players who are not, who are basically just, the whole thing is about whether you kneel or not, and that's it. I think he's correct. We are having these discussions about it. Really, if you look at this in the abstract, when would you stop kneeling? Theoretically, if you're kneeling because there's injustice in this country, when would you stop kneeling? Never, because the country begins with there's still injustice. We began as a nation that had slaves, and we're in a time now where that's gone, but there's continued injustice. And I imagine 100 years from now, there's going to be other forms of injustice. If the point is to raise awareness of it, awareness is up. I don't know when otherwise you would stop. So I don't have a problem with what he said any more than I have a problem with players kneeling. I think so much of this is the average fan really doesn't care that much anymore. They just sort of are tired of hearing about it over and over again. And the fact is, nobody ever looked during the national anthem to see what anybody was doing before this happened. Were they blowing their nose? Were they getting treatment? Were they on a table? Were they stretching? You know, it never became an issue. Now everybody's got binoculars out and are looking what people are doing. And you look, take your binoculars to the stands and see how many people are sitting down in the stands. It's the same thing. So I think people are just tired of the conversation, and I have respect for what he said.
Wait a minute. If they're tired of the conversation, but you just said we're having the conversation, and I'm wondering how having the conversation, guys like us having the conversation, is helping anybody. You know who's done the most? Colin Kaepernick has done the most, because he spent at least $1 million of his own money on various causes around the country. So he's actually done something. I don't know. I can't say what Dak Prescott has done. But for him to act as if we've reached some sort of high-minded finish line, because we're having these conversations, and you know what? Just because it's inconvenient, or fans are, I don't really care whether fans are tired of it or not. Just because it's inconvenient for them to listen to this conversation doesn't mean the players can't. Now, do I think they're going to keep doing it? No, I actually don't. But do I think this that Trump's going to stop screaming about it? I don't, because he thinks he can make political hay with it. So if one guy kneels, he's going to act like 1,000 guys are kneeling. And then we'll be back to that rally he gave in Alabama last September that looked like a white SEC crowd in the 1950s, where he called them SOBs.
Well, I don't connect this to Trump. I guess we just look at it differently. I'm aware of it. I'm aware of everything that he says. But honestly, we live in a time where Trump's, there was a story that came out that he averaged lies 15 to 20 times a day or some ridiculous thing. I think the overkill of reaction to his tweets and statements has gotten people numb. It's not that they don't care. It's that they're numb. And, you know, you could pick any time of the day to talk about, well, this would be a good time to protest what's going on in this country right now. I don't make a straight line connection. Maybe you do, and I respect that. I don't make a straight line connection anymore to Donald Trump. I think when this first happened, it was certainly there. But he's never going to stop as long as he's president. He's never going to stop, even if he's not president, tweeting about this stuff. And at some point, you have to sort of shut that out and say, okay, how are we going forward as a society? And I know it sounds crazy to do that in, you know, despite the president, because the president should be leading us in society. But I think many people recognize that we're in that position right now. And so all I'm saying about Dak Prescott is I don't think he deserves to be vilified or billed as an Uncle Tom or labeled as a donkey of the week, as he was on a radio show, because he took the position. If you really read his statement, it's not a single sentence. It's well thought out. And he took the position that this is not what I do. And this is not how I feel is appropriate to protest. He's not vilifying his teammates. He's not saying they're all jerks or they should be fired. He's just making a point. And if we can't respect a point that's somewhat different than the popular make everybody feel good point of view, then we're not being honest about what it is that we're trying to protect here. We're trying to protect everybody's respect and everybody's position as long as it's not harmful to one another. And I didn't hear one thing he said that was harmful to anybody.
All right, listen, before we move on to parting shots, we want to tell everybody about today's sponsor, Hims, not the kind I sing in church, HIMS. Did you know that 66% of men lose their hair by age 35? And the thing is, by the time you really start to notice hair loss, it's too late. It's easier to keep the hair you have than to replace the hair you've lost. Do you have any bald spots? Is your hairline moving further and further back? What happens in a year from now if you keep losing your hair? Well, we have a solution for you. For Hims, HIMS.com, a one-stop shop for hair loss, skincare, and sexual wellness for men. Hims connects you with real doctors and medical-grade solutions to treat hair loss. Well-known generic equivalents to name-brand prescriptions to help you keep your hair. No snake oil pills or gas station counter supplements. Prescription solutions backed by science. No waiting room, no awkward doctor visits. Save hours by going to forhims.com. It's so easy. All you have to do is answer a few quick questions and a doctor will review and prescribe you. And to make it even easier on you, all of the products are shipped directly to your door. Order now. Our listeners get a free trial of Hims for just $5 today, right now, while supplies last. See website for full details. This would cost hundreds if you went to the doctor or a pharmacy. That's forhims.com/reporters. forhims.com/reporters. Now it is time for our parting shots, and Mr. Ryan leads off.
Gentlemen, here is baseball in the summer of 2018. There were 15 major league games played Sunday. The teams involved used a total of 136 pitchers. Yes, I counted. I was doing my homework. There were, incidentally, 10 one-run games of those 15, which is interesting at the very least. But another matter entirely. The fewest amount of pitchers employed, even with a pair of 2-1s and a 3-2, was 7. Those being the Reds and Nats and the Dodgers and Astros. There were 10 pitchers or more utilized in 6 games. Then, of course, we had it capped off by a somewhat historically typical Red Sox-Yankees game that entered its 5th hour with the teams not yet out of the 9th inning. Now, we all know the game is different these days, but sometimes it's enlightening to probe deeply and realize just how different it has become.
Some of my best friends are what I like to call Tiger guys. They can't help themselves. They're pure of heart in their devotion to Tiger Woods. They think that the next round he plays will put him into a time machine and transport him back to 2000 and 2001. They came to be interested in golf because of Tiger Woods when he succeeded Michael Jordan as the biggest star in American sports. And they absolutely lost their minds before he did something at the final round of the British Open that he has done all year. Get close to the lead, actually having the lead in this case, before almost immediately falling back. They even buy into the notion that his comeback is somehow comparable to Serena Williams. Except he's played 14 tournaments this year, and she's basically played 2. He started out well this weekend at the Bridgestone on a course he once owned. Then he shot 73-73 on the weekend at the age of 42. Maybe if they play that challenge match, Phil Mickelson can at least make him feel young again.
Brevity is the soul of wit. But while there was plenty of soul and a decent amount of wit, there was no brevity to be found at the Football Hall of Fame speeches over the weekend. I knew we were in trouble when Ray Lewis put on a wireless mic. It was Sunday, and he was going to preach. He told people his speech was going to be 25 minutes long. He told people that. When someone tells you in advance that a speech is about 15 minutes longer than it need to be, you can bet it's going to be twice that. And it almost was. Lewis's speech clocked in at 33 minutes and 17 seconds. I would say that's the most ridiculous length I've ever heard, except that Brett Favre went 3 minutes longer in his Hall of Fame speech. 36, 37 minutes. How long can it take to say thank you? In the Disney film Moana, Lin Miranda wrote that intentionally obnoxious, indulgent song called You're Welcome, and that only took 3 minutes. But Ray was going to preach, and preach he did. And many in the audience seemed to enjoy it, although Hall of Fame speeches always struck me as like the elementary school recitals. You come to hear your kids, and you get stuck hearing everyone else's. Still, recitals are over in about an hour or two. At this rate, that's only going to be two speeches at the Hall of Fame. That's going to wrap it up for today's edition of the Sports Reporters Podcast. We do this every Monday and Friday, and we're glad to have you joining us today. If you like what you heard or didn't like what you heard, either way, leave us a comment. We always enjoy hearing from you, and you can tell people who are fans of the Sports Reporters TV show that this podcast has been going on for almost a year now, and they can get it anywhere where they get their popular podcasts. Until Friday, when we see you again, on behalf of Mike Lupica and Bob Ryan, this is Mitch Albom saying, have a terrific week.